Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Academy Award winner J.K. Simmons stars in the new MGM Plus original series, The Westies.
There it is, Javits Center.
Biggest construction project in the history of New York falls into the lap of the Irish.
This Irish crime gang built New York City on blood, sweat, and loyalty. Their legend is true.
The Italians outnumber us about 100 to 1.
Their story is criminal.
This Irish guy's threatening war.
He's gotta go.
Keep out of Hell's Kitchen.
The Westies. Watch now. Only on MGM Plus.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
You want a cup of joe with you?
I'm gonna make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
I'm the Joker, baby.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 88 of season 2 of Lights, Camera, Barstool. Wow, Gooch wearing his Avatar Way of Water. This is not a squad. This is a family shirt. It is a family.
Damn, shirt rules.
Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Chris Castellani, Gooch, talking a lot of Shazam today. We have Zachary Levi on the podcast. I got to talk to Zachary Levi very briefly. It was like a 20-minute interview. Got to talk to him about Shazam, some the DC haters, Of which there are many at this point. Yeah. It's very interesting. Reading, I'll tell you what, the social media, I guess, quote unquote, discourse. And I'm not even going to say that loudly because a lot of it is just people who don't like, who love Zack Snyder and love James. And I loved our time with Zack Snyder on this, but it's like sometimes people are a little ridiculous. But we'll see.
Yes.
We'll see what we think about Shazam. So We have Zachary Levi interview followed by our Shazam review. First week without The Last of Us, right, for this podcast?
In a while, yeah.
We'll talk Mando, though Succession coming back. Chris is going to binge Succession. Chris, I hope you better like it, Chris.
I bet I'll enjoy it quite a bit.
I just did a rewatch of it, and I just got – I'm not going to spoil it for Chris, but I got to a scene in the penultimate episode from last season where Roman looks at his phone and realizes something happened. And it's just an all-time moment in that. It maybe just TV moment, unbelievable.
I was cracking up yesterday at the primary ad for this season of Succession is Logan Roy doing the cufflink adjustment, the rock pose, which is very funny because I don't think there's anything the character Logan Roy would care about less than the position of his cufflinks or the adjusting them whatsoever.
His sleeves are rolled up more often than not on that show, I feel like.
Exactly.
By the way, I don't know if you saw, it was either Variety or THR was doing like, they talked to each of the actors about what it was like for like, you know, final days on set, wrapping up the show. And like, you know, Nicholas Braun is like, got really emotional about it. He's like, I love who plays Tom Wanscon, Matthew McFadden. Like, I'm going to miss him. Jeremy Strong's, you know, it's a chapter of my life closing. Brian Cox. Just wrapped it up and went home. Like, it just did not give a fuck.
Yeah. I saw someone tweet who was like, it's very funny how like life imitates art with like basically Brian Cox shitting on Jeremy Strong for method acting all the time. And it's like all he wants to do is like get Brian Cox's approval in real life. And he can't because Brian Cox just shits on him for being method.
It's kind of funny too, because Sarah Snook, who plays Shiv Roy, she said she didn't know until the table read was last season. I don't think HBO knew it was the last season until like recently, because the first trailer for it didn't even market it as the last season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was always sold as a four-season show.
It was always assumed that it would be. And then in some interviews, producers and writers were like, last season. People were like, wait a second, like confirmed? And then they're like, confirmed. Then all the marketing material shifted over to the final season. So like it was kind of a weird way that worked. I mean, I'm glad it's last season. Yeah. I'm gonna miss it. I think if it lands the final season, it's like, I mean, you could probably consider this to be the case already, but like truly, like without any question, like you're a hater if you don't view it as a like prestige top tier all time show. Like I think it will land, and I think they've shown no reason why you wouldn't expect that. But like you can't go much further than like they have like one more run of who will win, right? And I mean, again, we won't spoil it. Of course, we're going to watch through it all. And if you're still binging, you have a week to binge. I know people are too, because I think the hype is building up again. But I got to assume someone's going to die, right?
I hope they all do.
Got to croak.
I think it would be hilarious.
I think one of the cast members said that, right? They're like, you can't have a show called Succession without anybody succeeding, actually succeeding character of Logan Roy. You can't do that for too many seasons long, which makes this basically someone's the perfect ending point. Someone's well, I would imagine it would be the 90-year-old man, but also like there's like a decent chance that Kendall does some sort of relapse business or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, so very, 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 very excited for that. It is. It's just, yeah, it's so damn good. This episode, though, brought to you by 3Chi. That's right. Many things in life that deliver, but I don't think anything delivers quite like, in terms of things that we read, 3Chi. Especially if you want to fly, by the way. I just want to note that. If you want to calm down and be chill flying, just flew. I just flew such a bad flight, and 3Chi helps much. Such a bad flight that they announced before the flight took off they wouldn't be serving drinks on the flight for a 3-hour flight. That's when you know. Look at Kenjack. Kenjack's always stanced up with 3Chi.
This is cut from YouTube, but yeah.
It's true. All right there.
But see, if you're listening, imagine Kenjack holding a bunch of 3Chi. One of the best things in life has got to be getting high whenever you want, without the paranoia of consuming some sketchy, you know, black market bad stuff. What's the best way to do that? It's 3Chi. 3Chi has the highest quality cannabis products and more delicious Delta 9 edibles. Very good. Their cookies are still the goated product they have, in my personal opinion. Delta 9 edibles, industry-leading Delta 8 products, their new line of Delta 9O vapes, everything in between, drink mixes, all that. Their gummies. When you buy 3Chi, you're getting the highest quality and purity taste and that craveably potent buzz every single time. All products formulated by a biochemist made in the USA and USA-grown hemp. LCB listeners right now get an exclusive 15% discount on all 3Chi's premium THC products. Go to 3Chi, the number 3CHI.com. Use promo code LIGHTS15, LIGHTS.
Close.
Add rates for dyslexic people, not easy. LIGHTS15 to take 15% off your order. Must be 21 or older to purchase. Please use responsibly. I had a dyslexic moment the other day. I saw someone's name at a restaurant. The waiter's name was it was Lathan, LATHAN, but I kept thinking, I thought it was Lanthony, and I'm like, that's incredible. What a name, Lanthony.
That would be cool.
I was like, it's Lathan. I was like, oh, yeah, wow.
Okay. This is a very, very funny moment on the bracket where we were talking about anime and like or manga and how you have to read it back to front. And I think Nick was like, yeah, Rudy's reading this shit. And he's like, this is easy. This is the easiest thing I've ever read in my life as a dyslexic person.
Anything else? Congrats if your college university made the Sweet 16, which is 90% of our listeners are Michigan State fans. Mm-hmm. Tough for Gooch, Kentucky, once again, not going back.
Get Cal out of here.
Once again, get him out. The UConn Huskies onto the Sweet 16. Yeah, Michigan State. Almost all of our listeners are Michigan State fans.
They are. There's a lot of MSU people. A lot of MSU dudes.
Yeah.
So congrats.
As a fan base, Michigan State doesn't get enough credit for maybe here, like at Barstool, but like they know how to assemble an army.
They do.
It's just weird. They have the pure numbers. I think Michigan has like the consolidated heroes, like Michigan Man from Barstool Idol or whatever. You know what I mean? They funnel it all into singular people.
So yeah, congrats on that. And we'll congratulate you again if your team makes Final Four next week. Hope I'm included on that. Next up, news. A lot of news. A lot of, like, I don't know if negative is the right word, but not like great news. Like a lot of I'm not doing blank. Let's start off. Tarantino, though, will be positive. Potentially his final film. I still don't understand what's going on with that.
It won't be.
Yeah, I just don't believe him. And that's not like he's a liar. I just think he likes film too much. Mm-hmm. Like he just likes, but I don't know. We'll see. Maybe
actors and directors also retire all the time and never actually retire.
He's just not old enough,
right?
He's gonna do TV. He has a miniseries lined up, right. And I could see him also doing a Kill Bill Volume 3. And it's counting that into that one movie.
Yeah.
And being like, oh, it doesn't really count. Towards the count. Because he counts Kill Bill in volume one and two. Is,
he releases Kill Bill volume 10. He's like, nah, it's still one movie.
Yeah. The weird thing is, like, I feel like he does fill his time between movies now. He just goes on like a trillion podcasts and just will dump on a Marvel or whatever.
He just wrote a book. Yeah.
Yeah, does all that stuff. So he's filling his time. So I wouldn't totally doubt it, but yeah.
The movie critic, film follows a female lead in 1970s LA. That. And just saying that's a Tarantino movie, that just sounds awesome. Obviously, his female lead movies have been routinely great. Mm-hmm. Some awesome, I mean, some baked in controversy, Kill Bill, in terms of like production. But between that, Jackie Brown, sounds great.
Yep.
Sounds like a Tarantino movie.
Apparently based on a real person, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we went over that in the long take. But I doubt he'll do straight up biopic because
no,
Tarantino is not going to do a biopic. Ever like that's just not that's not something he'll do.
If he did one, it would be about himself.
He's kind of awesome.
Yeah, that would be pretty sweet.
The what do you call it?
He would cast who would he cast as himself? He would definitely cast like someone really fucking hot.
Chalamet. Yeah.
Yeah. I do wish he wasn't doing LA again.
Yeah,
like, going back to a little too close to Once Upon a Time.
But also, he did like a bunch of Old West. He did like I liked when he went into Inglourious Basterds. I still think like him getting it out in there, it was just so fucking cool. I want to make an Inglourious Basterds too. Just I don't know, kill Hirohito or something. Like do something different. Kill Mussolini. They'll be the guys that hang Mussolini from his toes or whatever. I'd be down for that. What was it based on? It's based on a real critic. I forget the name already though. It's like something with a P.
What if it was like the guys who capture like Saddam?
Pauline Kael. Yeah, yeah, or. Didn't they like blow up all Saddam Hussein's sons? Like, didn't they like they got all Saddam Hussein's son into one house and they just blew it up? I think or something like that. There's weird shit going on. Or the dude, or him directing like a the killing of Osama bin Laden movie would be very, like Osama bin Laden spitting out Tarantino dialogue. That might be the funniest thing that's ever existed. Like Arabic translation of Tarantino dialogue. Holy shit! we're looking at Jessica Chastain's toes in Zero Dark Thirty.
So that's
against it.
That's she looked great at the Academy Awards, by the way. My God.
She always looks great.
Isn't it crazy? She won an Academy Award 2 years ago. We all forgot about it because of that fucking slap. She won for that fucking Eyes of Tammy Faye, and like no one I don't even think remembers it.
Yeah, it wasn't a great role, not one of the better movies of the year either.
Not even her best role by like a decent margin.
Yeah,
she should have won for Zero Dark Thirty. I feel like.
Yeah,
I liked her in Molly's Game.
Awesome.
Oh, Molly's Game. She was great.
And Costner out of nowhere. Pretty good.
Anyone who performs well in a Sorkin written script is doing it. I mean, that's not a knock on Sorkin. You're just spewing out unreal amounts of dialogue.
You know what I rewatched this weekend was This Is the End. And Michael Cera, speaking of Molly's Game, Michael Cera playing a fictionalized version of actor is maybe the greatest thing ever to happen.
It's so funny.
Two for two in hysterical portrayals of like stereotypical actors.
He's supposed to be Toby in that film, right? Toby McGuire?
Yeah.
So funny.
Slapping Rihanna's ass at the end.
Now to the more negative things. Ben Affleck not going to direct for James Gunn's DCU, which is kind of disappointing. By the way, apparently Air is unbelievable.
Good. Awesome. Awesome.
I heard opposite things. I heard Air. I heard two things. I heard one that it is extremely, extremely like safe, like plays by numbers for every sports movie ever, like follows that same playbook, which is fine. Like, I don't expect them to do some crazy filmmaking technique shit with it. But like that. And I also heard like, at the end of the day, like, hey, it's a really good dad movie. That isn't always necessarily an indicator that's good. Yeah. That's just an indicator that's a good dad movie, which is fine.
Did you see the stuff from last night, though?
I saw some. It was basically the same sentiment about dad movies.
Okay. I saw a bunch of people saying that they pushed for it to come out in December because they thought it could win. Like, they thought it could truly contend with Everything Everywhere All at Once or Best Picture, but the studio wanted to do it as a money play and didn't want to put it up against Avatar because of Nike and everything. So I don't know. I mean, if that's true, that's pretty big. Though to the point of it being safe, like, I'd also be like Argo is safe, right? Like, I feel like Affleck's movies are like on the – they're like the safer side of Hollywood releases in terms of that.
Yeah, but like there's – I feel like with drama and like even action, whatever, like all of that has like the safeness for that is different than the safeness of sports movies, where like sports movies, it feels like every one of them has that, like the same plot structure. Right. And it's not like there's like a shit ton of sports movies like there are with like drama or action or any of that stuff to draw from. It's really just like a pretty consolidated group and they all follow more or less the same structure. So like, and again, not totally expecting them to be like, I don't know, Moneyball or something, but like, I don't know.
I'm curious. I mean, so it's got 9 reviews so far on Tomatoes, all fresh. It's 100. That's very early, but we'll see.
They're expecting this to make a lot of money.
Well, I'm not saying it will. I'm just saying like they didn't want to put it up against Avatar because they wanted it to make money.
Okay.
Instead of putting it up to be an award winner now, because now if it is really good, it's got to last until fucking next year.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about this though, and I when we talked about the Oscars, I didn't mention this. I feel like that matters less than it used to.
I mean, Everything Everywhere All at Once won.
Everything Everywhere came out in March, didn't it?
Can a movie like this, and even if this is great, can a sports movie that is, because like, I mean, I'm trying to look at some of like the reviews are. Actor Affleck remains one of the directors who can disguise a powerful parable as giddy, crowd pleasing entertainment. That is what it's like, crowd pleasing. Like, that's like, again, IndieWire, one of the best sports movies ever made. Like, all right.
Yeah, I remember Campus.
An atypical sports drama, 8 out of 10. Like, that kind of lines up with your
atypical.
Saying,
that's sort.
But it's like, well, like, I think this is one of those ones that could prove that, though. It's like, if this is a really, really, really good sports movie, can that last all year long? Because it's something where, like, maybe if it came out in November, maybe it could last. Like, something that is really good like this, but doesn't have like Everything Everywhere at Once, obviously stayed the course for many reasons, right? Super weird, different, unique. Anyone who discovered it to be like, oh wow. And it kind of like it was like rediscovered, mm-hmm. It was like, wow, this is different. We're like, if it's a sports movie, no matter how good it is, it's like, it's still a sports movie.
Yeah.
It's still like a biopic.
So I'm so excited for it. This is something where like, I know the bare bones of Nike, like their sort of start and everything. And I knew that like Michael Jordan obviously is so huge in their success, but like, I don't know enough and I'm not going to look anything up because I want to basically learn as much as I can through this and then Wikipedia it all after that. And obviously the cast is absolutely insane.
The cast, that's something, the big thing too, right? Yeah. The cast is awesome.
I saw someone say, they asked, like Affleck asked Michael Jordan, he's like, well, who do you want to play your mom? And he's like, well, obviously it's Viola Davis or nothing. And like, I think that's cool. I love that. I'm super, super excited for it.
Well, if it's not one of the best actresses in Hollywood, yeah, then I don't want this movie made. Yeah.
And done.
Yeah, so that's cool. But he's not doing the DC movie, any DC movie. He said, I have nothing against James Gunn. Nice guy. Sure, he's doing a great job. I just wouldn't want to go in and direct the way they're doing that. I'm not interested in that. Obviously, it's a super contained cinematic universe. They have a lot of plans in place. James Gunn will be directing Superman Legacy, which was – he was going to write it. Then there was rumors. I know, Gucci, you're talking about rumors with Spielberg and stuff, but he's going to direct it. Obviously, Affleck very closely tied with Zack Snyder in the production of that, of Zack Snyder's Justice League and all that. So, I mean, it makes sense. It's nothing too shocking, but you'd rather him say, I'm going to do it than not going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I've kind of come around on these comments. Like, initially I took them as he is loyal to Zack Snyder, therefore doesn't want to deal with the DCU or play in their sandbox. But I think it's he just doesn't view himself as a IP director. Like, he views himself as he'll take on his own projects, do what he wants to do, but he's not going to do anything self-contained like this, or not self-contained, but contained in a larger universe. Unfortunate. I would have liked to see him. I think he understands the Batman character. I think he could have done a really good Batman movie, especially the one that they're doing with Damian. I think that could have been really interesting for him, but you know, it didn't shake out that way. I think James Gunn will be able to attract a lot of cool directors, but obviously Ben Affleck, not one of them.
I think when I saw this news, I was just like, I wouldn't want Ben Affleck to direct a superhero movie. Like, the one thing he's good at is stuff that's outside. Like, maybe he'd be good at it one day, or maybe it's something like he'd do like a different type of superhero movie one day. But just the direction that superhero movies in these two big dueling universes are with DCEU and Marvel, like the way that those movies are made, I wouldn't want Ben Affleck to be a part of that. I would want him to do something maybe totally different. So like, I wouldn't expect him to be. I didn't want him to be. I don't know what the question base was that elicited this answer, but I was just like, I don't did people really want this that bad? Like, did they were they begging Ben Affleck to direct a Batman movie?
They were at one point. Yeah. Well, he was supposed to at one point.
I don't think he should. I think he's better off doing all of these other movies that are all amazing and kind of stick to that. Don't make Live by Night again, but make the rest of your catalog all great, Ben Affleck.
God, he wanted that movie to be so good.
I know.
That movie just ruined him, didn't it? It ruined him for like 5 years.
Yeah. I think he basically stopped. He made so many good movies before that. And just like, he's just like, I'm done for a bit. Gotta let this settle.
I still feel like the Batman character like allows directors to do whatever they want. Like, I think if you're a director, if you can pick one superhero to take on, you pick Batman, because Batman is so malleable and you can do so many cool things as a director with the character. Like,
it's also
look at Matt Reeves. Look at Matt Reeves, Nolan, yeah. Tim Burton. Like, they all have very unique takes on the character, and you could really feel them.
But then that's also part of, I think, the issue for him is that it would be a flooded market. It's like, hey, you have to make this movie that's going to come out like relatively alongside and be cannibalized by an already great Batman that's out within DC, and you need to make yours like as good. Like, that's just, it's shitty. It's a shitty situation to be in.
So Ben Affleck's a little chicken is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, he's a big time pussy, Ben Affleck. Go smoke a cigarette, bitch. Drink another iced coffee.
Speaking of directing things and Everything Ever All at Once, the Daniels, who directed Everything Ever All at Once, they apparently directed one episode of The Skeleton Crew for Disney Plus, the show created by John Watts, the Spider-Man, Tom Holland trilogy director, created and produced by Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni, Jude Law's in the show. We've seen a couple clips and just very like, and when I mean clips, I mean like literal, like,
1 second.
A couple screenshots and Jude Law moving for 3 seconds. Seen very brief images of it. They directed, then one of them, Daniel, I think it was Daniel Kwan, went on Instagram and was like, no, we're not corporate now. We didn't sell out. We directed one episode of a TV show. And he joked, like, we have to, he's like, we got to, what did he say? We have to keep our healthcare intact. I forget what it was. Yeah, we got the bag. We took the bag. We directed one episode of Star Wars. We got asked to do it by John Watts.
I mean,
that's pretty cool.
Everything Ever All at Once was produced by Abgo, like the Russo brothers. Like, let's not pretend like they financed Everything Ever All at Once by themselves or something like that.
I would love if like Skeleton Crew is like a pretty like standard Star Wars show, then there's just one just wacky weird ass episode that makes no sense because the Daniels did it.
That's like that clip that goes around every now and then of like the punched up dialogue from Pelican Brief, I think it was, that Quentin Tarantino made, where it's like the dialogue is all really stupid and then there's just one scene where it's just like very Tarantino dialogue that stands out against the rest. I think that will be the Daniels episode of Skeleton Crew.
Also, like they directed this like before.
Right, that's what I said.
Based on production, like, this is before the movie came out. Also, yeah. Like, people who act like A24 is like a bunch of artists sitting in a coffee shop making movies. They're just a bunch of It's a bunch of hedge fund bros with like good taste in movies that buy stuff and distribute it. Like, it's not like, it's not some like artist playground.
This is tied to disappointing news, though, that Damon Lindelof will no longer write a Star Wars movie. And he had an interesting quote. He didn't say much about it. But he said, like, sometimes. God, I had the fucking quote up. Hold on, let me get the quote up. But basically, it's not the best news in the world. It's not what you wanted to see or hear if you're Damon Lindelof has done some amazing stuff. Some people don't love all his stuff because of just how different it is and the cliffhangery aspect and the twist aspect, Lost. I mean, Watchmen's the greatest comic book thing ever made.
First three seasons of Lost, maybe, arguably some of the best television ever made.
Yeah, right. Maybe I should just be eating. He said, maybe I shouldn't be cooking. Maybe I should just be eating. He mentioned 1977, seeing Star Wars as a 4-year-old. Said, things possible. Sometimes when you hold something in such high reverence and esteem, you start to get in the kitchen. Like I said, maybe I shouldn't be cooking, which it does make sense. He is someone who is so invested in what he does. And not that no one else is, but like he has such a love and care, and you saw that with Watchmen. Like he truly immersed himself. As it's like people said, like you almost think he had the better understanding of Watchmen than anyone else. Yeah. And so maybe he just got to a point where he's like, ugh, like it's just too hard. Like I don't want to make a bad Star Wars movie. And you see, look at this. The Daniels just directed one episode, and people were like shitting down their throats. Like, I can't believe you did a Star Wars. It's like, so I get it. I get it to an extent. Like maybe he just. just doesn't have it in it. But it's still concerning because this is not the first person to depart a Star Wars project. It's
not the 1500th.
It's a problem.
It's a serious problem, and I think she's close to retiring. But you got to start questioning like how hard, whether or not it's easy to work with Kathleen Kennedy. Because like that just seems to be the only explanation for this. She's the only consistent in this universe. I mean, so many directors, ones we like, ones we don't. The Patty Jenkins one just got dropped. Mm-hmm. I'm just under the impression that anytime somebody makes a good movie, they attach them to a project, knowing full well there's a chance that project like. I think wasn't Josh Trank supposed to do Boba Fett, and then
that was after Fantastic Four came out.
Four came out, and they said, "Yeah, fuck no!" Like
the Mangold was,
yeah,
James Mangold was connected to it.
So I mean, I don't know why that keeps happening. But the one that's still in the works is Taika's. So we'll see where it goes.
Even that's not really right.
Yeah, we haven't heard much about that.
A few weeks ago, they said they were adamant that it's going to happen.
They have no films on the schedule at this point because, they have to release like upcoming slates and schedules because of investors. Currently, there's no Star Wars films on the slate. Mm-hmm. So take that for – I don't know if they fully know what they want to do in terms of films right now. They clearly have a vision for television. But it's like – what it feels like they make it so much harder than it needs to be. There's so many good ideas. Get on Reddit. There's a bunch of idiots on there, but like you at least get the ball rolling on something. Like they feel so clueless. I don't know.
Well, it brings up what I talked about with Mando last week, which is I don't understand the idea. Well, the prequels came up with this. The idea that Star Wars ever needs to be complicated. Like I remember when Force Awakens came out and people were so butthurt that it's just A New Hope. I'm like, isn't that kind of what Star Wars is? There's a big ship and they blow it up at the end. Like, I understand, there's a lot of other great Star Wars out there, but no, I'm with you. Like, it seems like they've tried to overcomplicate this way too much.
Yeah. And they acted like it wasn't the exact same plot of Return of the Jedi too. Like that's just, it's the same thing. Right, exactly. Like it already happened twice within the original trilogy that they revere. With Star Wars, it's just like, I don't know. I like their television plan enough that I'm not pissed off about their movies at all. And I feel like with somebody like Lindelof, he's somebody who works best in the sandbox. You know what I mean? And Star Wars is something where there's a shit ton of reverence. Like, look at it. Lost is like a great example. Like, no one went into Lost with any expectations of anything or any previous thing to really draw on. And like, maybe the best or the closest thing he had was Watchmen. And even then, people, I think, were looking for more Watchmen content, regardless of what it was. And with Star Wars, people are kind of not in that space. They're like, hey, this last trilogy, we weren't totally into it. Their TV's doing great, but movies, they clearly have a bit of a, I don't know, misunderstanding of where they're going. The only thing I want Star Wars to do, and this goes back to that sequel trilogy, is make sure that if you're making another trilogy, another group of movies, whatever it is, just make sure that you have cohesion behind it. You have like a very solid plan for all three movies that is connected. And again, that's the inverse problem happened with the sequel and the prequel trilogies, which is like this the prequel trilogies, great cohesion, bad movies. The sequel trilogy, zero cohesion, not awful individual movies, at least comparatively. And like that's all I want. I want them to have decent quality and just a vision and like a fucking 10-year plan in place for whatever franchise they want to make or whatever trilogy they want to make.
Yeah.
That'll lead us into Mando episode 3 talk. Mm. Very, very Andor-y episode of Mandalorian. I really, first of all, there's like two totally different things happening in that episode. The very on Coruscant, which is great to see. Also, did you notice the jingle when they were walking around, like the outside? It was the Resistance theme song.
Here we got,
which is kind of like a meta thing. Oh, nice! You got your Pershing.
Yeah,
you have it. Yeah, where's your outfit?
Jeff? Where's your Imperial outfit?
Very cool episode that really works inside the new Republic. I loved seeing that stuff, but that it was bookended by just awesome aerial fights with Bo-Katan and Din Djarin. The opening aerial fight near Mandalore, above where Bo-Katan's, I guess, castle is, and I don't know the names. I'm not a good Star Wars nerd. Was fantastic. The TIE fighter battle that ruled, which also makes me think. We can go a little theory here. I think we got I think we got Grand Admiral Thrawn on the way in here soon. Because Bo-Katan makes a comment. She said, like, that's not just a like a, an Imperial warlord or whatever. Like, those are too many ships. And I just think that we have Thrawn coming in here sometime soon. It just makes
sense. You think he shows up in Mando versus Sokka?
I think he does.
Okay. I think he's coming. Like, I'm like 99% sure this is what they're building towards, but
I just, and that's not a spoiler thing. I don't know if he's coming in here or not. And I'm not even sure if it's been, I don't even think leakers have that. But I think the way she said, like, look at all those TIE fighters, it's more than just a warlord. Like, that would imply to me it's Thrawn. Now, okay. It could just be Gideon again. It could, Ken Jacqueline. Full.
Oh my God.
There we go. Is it as striking now, or is it better without? Yeah, I guess
you just need to like slouch your shoulders and act like you have a micro penis.
You're not on YouTube. Ken Jackson full Imperial uniform,
First Order technically, but it's close enough.
Yeah. Anyway, cool. It was a cool episode. And you knew, and I don't. Again, I'm doing a bad job on Star Wars names here, but you know she was up to some bad shit. That whole episode, you knew she was leading him down the wrong path.
She had a vice grip on that guy's dick, and
he's a Pershing's a simp loser, simp. Like absolutely.
Go outside the rules, will you, and just trying to help the Empire. Is that okay?
Can I get some biscuits?
Yeah, I think the yellow ones.
I think that episode is kind of cool. I think mostly because like we don't really get a lot of view of like what the bureaucracy of the New Republic was like, and I think that like getting to see like, hey, it's not really. I think I posted the It's Always Sunny clip after. It's like, who am I supposed to vote for? The Democrat that's blasting me in the ass, or the Republican that's blasting me in the ass? Like either way, a lot of people get fucked by the bureaucracy, no matter what. And I like the whole almost very similar to Total Recall scene. The guy's like, oh, it's not a mind flayer. You just give it like a little bit less electricity and it's not as bad, which like you're getting into a mind flayer, brother. Like, I don't think much is going to work out for you. But I think that part was cool. Just kind of seeing this part of the New Republic and just seeing like you kind of see the gears of like why these guys got fucked up by the New Order, by the First Order so bad. You know what I mean? And like, because this is, again, something that we don't really get a ton of.
Yeah. I'll have Gooch go last just because I know what his opinion is on the episode. I mirror a lot of you guys. I like this episode quite a bit. I mean, for a one-off, I like just – and there's a nostalgic element to this. I do like going back to those worlds from the prequels that you always felt like were underexplored. So I think it's cool to be on Coruscant, kind of see what's going on there. I like the spy elements to it. Like I said, though, I'm fine with it as a one-off. Like, I don't want this to be what Book of Boba Fett was, where half the season is just taken up by other subplots. I don't believe that will happen. I like the ending, and I like the fact that they get kind of dark with this near the end. I'm fine with it. The last two Mandalorian seasons played out very similarly, where I liked it up until like episode 5, and then it got great. And I expect it'll probably be something similar this season.
They needed to push, like, there's a larger plot that needs to be pushed. And, like, whatever. Go check out, I mean, all you got to do is have a reference. Martin Scorsese, you're talking about plot versus story. Like, in the end, like, the character and, like, the little stories have always mattered more. But, like, there is, like, you got to push it a little. It's always been lingering. Like, we got to push it a little further there. And, like, to completely divert from Mando, best way to do it. Throw him into hyperspace for an episode and go somewhere else for a little bit. And also, it was a very like character driven episode, and it was directed by Lee Isaac Chung, who did Minari, by the way. So it's cool. The next one's directed by Carl Weathers. It's titled The Foundling, which I think most will assume doesn't mean it's about Grogu. Most assume it will be about Grogu.
I thought it would be about Bo-Katan, kind of coming back into the or becoming part of this cult or whatever, because she was obviously kind of interested in it.
That's true, because she's now.
What if we get a flashback finally into like Din's childhood? Which we really never really understood what the fuck happened to him.
Got blown up. His parents got wasted by droids, by a super battle droid.
Which, by the way, we'll probably air it during the end of the week episode. I think because we have to because of time, because we also have a John Leguizamo interview later in the week. But we interviewed Katie Sackhoff, the Bo-Katan actress, who she was fucking amazing.
Longmire star.
Longmire.
I like that show. This episode, I think, good in theory. Like, I didn't love it. It's probably my least favorite Mando episode. I thought it was more or less like a burger with two really great buns and the meat in the middle just did not work for me. Just stale, old, rotten, rancid meat.
That just means you hate it.
Yeah. Well, I like the beginning and the end. I like the Mando stuff.
You would not eat that burger. You would not eat the burger.
In theory, I like what they're going before because I do love Andor and I love that world building of the Empire and kind of the politics of it. Like, I even think, in theory, what George Lucas tried to do in the prequels isn't terrible. Like, I think building out that world is cool. I love world building. But I don't think the performances were particularly strong. Like, they didn't give me much to be invested for. I didn't really root for either of them. In fact, I kind of rooted against the little whimpering Dr. Pershing, L-62, whatever he's called. I thought that the overarching storyline they're pushing, I'm a little worried in the direction they're heading, especially with the cloning. If they try to lead...
Oh, I know why, which you have a fair reason
for that. If they try to lead that into either Snoke or Palpatine, I will be fairly upset if they try to tie this into the
really
trilogy. I will say though
don't see the reason for it.
You gotta know I think this is cool. This is what Filoni does best, which is wiping up the mess of other Star Wars properties that he's not involved in, so yeah. It might make it good. You never know.
I do understand your concern there. We talked about this briefly the other day, just you and me, and I do agree with you on that.
I've always kind of pushed back though on the idea that the Clone Wars, the series, Dave Filoni's series, retroactively makes the prequel trilogy good. Like, yeah, it doesn't. Like, it just it doesn't fix it. It's just a good series that kind of
it doesn't make it good. It sanitizes a lot of the issues, or at least it makes it relatively better. Not good, but relatively better.
It makes elements of the prequel trilogy better. And I've had this argument. I have this argument two or three times a year on Twitter when I crap on the prequels. Like, well, what about watch Clone Wars? Like, yeah, like there's elements from the prequels in Clone Wars that I like now, but it doesn't for me. Like it doesn't mean the movies are better. They're still ass to me. They're still ass movies.
Yeah.
Especially the first two.
I think if you tighten that down, if you tighten the middle 30-35 minutes you spent on Coruscant down into a 20-minute storyline, I think it improves quite a bit. The pacing was a little bit off there.
The irony of being the longest episode and people like I'm like, you know what? Like the shorter episodes are kind of like there's a reason why they hit. They never overstay their welcome. I really like this episode, but I can't really disagree with your take.
I also really like the his like post-shift psych evals that he had with like the little robot cyborg. Like it's kind of like almost like a Blade Runner nod, like where he goes in, talks to the robot. I really like those. I almost wish we got more of that and got to his breaking point that way.
The robot, the protocol droid that drives him to his, like, I guess, witness, whatever, it's the original C-3PO Ralph McCrory design.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, cool.
There's a Schwarzenegger movie if you ever go look with it that, up. Too, with, like, a robot taxi, right? It wasn't Total Recall. Which one was it?
It's Halloween Town.
What was it? Running Man, maybe.
This fucking skeleton. So that's Mando. And then last thing, Marvel Studios, their head of VFX and post-production leaving the company. This is pretty big news.
And she got dumped on the way out by basically everybody. They're all just like, yeah, she's a tyrant that like played favorites. And if you didn't like play by her rules, you basically got fired or didn't get any work at all. And the people she did like got overworked to the bone. It's crazy.
I'm Victoria Alonso. That was old Bobby Iger cleaning up a mess there.
I'm woke on this. I think she's a scapegoat. I've never heard her name. I've never heard her name in my life. Like,
I'm with you on that only because I remember the first report I saw was like people are saying she's single-handedly responsible for the VFX debacle with Marvel. It's like no, I don't think anyone's single-handedly responsible for this.
It's like that fucking episode of The Office where Creed's about to get fired, so he finds that woman like when there's the obscene watermark on the thing, so he just finds a woman to get fired. I don't know. I don't have any other thoughts on that.
I mean, to be fair though, Gooch. What does your Rolodex of VFX studio heads look like here? It's not like you don't have like a collect like trading cards of like VFX. And
Darren Revell probably does.
No, but like in my mind, she's probably not setting the budget for Marvel Studios VFX. She's probably handed a budget from the board, and then she uses that small budget to find non-union VFX studios and works them to the bone and underpays them. Like that's probably what she was given to work with and what she did. But I don't think she, like whoever they install next, unless they give them more of a budget and make it a priority to give VFX studios the pay they deserve and, you know, the working hours they deserve, then I don't see how things are going to change.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, obviously something had to change. So it's like whether it's a scapegoat or not.
The only thing I would disagree with is only just because the people that were part of those studios saying that, like, it wasn't necessarily that. It was just like she liked the people she liked and didn't give work to anybody else. And like that is why the studios that they were using were overtaxed, and that there were other options available, but that she just didn't choose to use them. Which, again, this could all just be like slandering this poor woman on her way out of the office as a scapegoat, but like that's at least what they were saying.
I hope that's the case.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of hope that poor woman gets stuck that much that like this is the only thing they need to do to fix, because it clearly needs to be fixed. Like, it really, oh my gosh, it gets worse. It gets worse every fucking movie.
Yeah. Mm.
Exactly.
I think that's it for news. We have Zach. Almost said Zach Snyder.
No, SnyderCon. Did you see
SnyderCon?
Because he made that big announcement. Everybody was like, "Oh, is he getting like an animated series or a comic book spinoff to complete the DCEU?" And it was just because he made that like little tease like 2 weeks ago with the Darkseid voice. And no, it's just an announcement for what movies he'll be showing at SnyderCon. SnyderCon 2.
Mm-hmm. What's gonna be? It's going to be right after.
You announced that shit on Vero
right after,
or whatever.
Right after VCon. It's going to be Gary V's VCon, and the next weekend it's going to be SnyderCon back to back.
Fucking Vero. Oh. Right? That was his app, right? I'm not. I think it was.
Yeah,
it is Vero.
Okay. Yeah. Excuse me. Zachary Levi plays Shazam, the superhero version of Billy Batson.
Captain Marvel.
Talk to him. And then we will talk about the movie he was in. Here it is.
All right. The second time in the history of this podcast, we have Zach Levi on. Last time to talk football movies, though. This time, we shift to superheroes. Shazam! Fury of the Gods, coming out March 17th. I think it's out some places now for advanced paid previews, as they call it. We used to have regular midnight showings. You have to show up at midnight. Now you get to see it days in advance. But everywhere, March 17th, the sequel. I like when we intro comic book movies because you don't really got to say much because people kind of know what it is. Shazam 2, Fury of the Gods, a sequel. How are you feeling? Finally coming out, the second go-round, and a much different type of movie here.
I mean, it feels great. I get paid to be a child superhero, so you can't really beat that as a profession. I grew up loving superheroes, comic books, video games, all the things. So I'm literally living my dreams. The fact that I got hired to play this role once is an insane blessing. The fact that we got a sequel, you know, a lot of films, even very successful films, don't get sequels. So that's a huge blessing. We had a tremendous time, so much fun shooting this movie. And it shows, like the fun is felt when you watch this film. And really, it's not, if we did our job right, it's not all that different. There's more story to tell, but the essence of the movie, the DNA of the movie is the same. It's that same family, fun, adventure, heart, humor, charm, spookiness, Amblin Lucasfilm feeling kind of world. We just had, you know, a little more time and a little more budget to build out on that. And so now we have these three goddesses and Dame Helen Mirren and Lucy Liu and Rachel Zegler, who are all fantastic individuals on screen and off, who so deftly play these goddesses who have come to kill me and my siblings. And we have a dragon and creatures, and, you know, we had more budget to go and, you know, build it out. So that's the difference. But I think people will be happy to know that if they liked the first one, if they liked the kind of nugget of what made up the first one, they get all that and more.
It's definitely fun is, I think, the big thing that people took away from it. And that's not a knock on any of the other movies I know in the DC universe. But that was a big thing that people took away from the first one was fun. You mentioned that you get to play a child superhero type. How compare that to say you were playing like a Joaquin Phoenix Joker. Now, granted, that's not a superhero, but what's the difference between playing Like if you had the choice, like, is this truly like the dream for you, is playing like this fun, gets to make jokes, gets to reference like pop culture within the movie, or like maybe dabble in having a, you know, lose 100 pounds in 3 weeks and be weird and all, you know.
I want to do all of it. Yeah. I mean, I want to do all of it. I think that they're all different types of journeys and challenges, and I welcome that. I always want to take on new jobs that challenge me and challenge other people's perceptions of what it is that I can and can't do, you know. And I think that going and jumping into a role like Joaquin Phoenix's Joker would be an incredible challenge, an incredible journey, and one you could enjoy doing. But it's, you know, there's a lot of darkness in that. And so tonally, you're not getting to just stay in fun. With Shazam, there's moments of drama. There's moments of you know, emotion and much more groundedness and stuff. But throughout, I mean, the delight of the film, the conceit of it, is this wish fulfillment. It's this kid gets a magic word to say and magically become, you know, this adult-looking superhero. and all the fun that ensues from that. And then all of his siblings, they all have the powers now. So I don't think you're telling the story correctly if you're not infusing it with that kind of enjoyment, you know, and, which is not to say that Joaquin Phoenix or actors like him playing darker roles can't enjoy that experience, but they're not cracking wise. They're not making Fast and the Furious jokes.
Right,
with
right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's just silly. It's so fun.
You mentioned some of the new castmates you have in this. Two legends, Lucy Liu, Dame Helen Mirren, Rachel Zegler, which we've talked about plenty. West Side Story, absolutely unreal. The fact that Steven Spielberg just made maybe a better West Side Story is just kind of mind-blowing. But they're in it. But Dame Helen Mirren, you mentioned she's in the Fast and Furious franchise too. How cool is it to not just be with a legend like that, but in such a role that you're not used to with someone like Dame Helen Mirren? It's so different and fun. She's been in those types of roles, but that's just got to be a fucking blast to act alongside somebody so iconic, but in such a different type of vehicle.
I mean, it was an absolute treat, man, on like soup to nuts. She's just one of the coolest broads. Like, she's the damiest dame, but doesn't throw it around. Doesn't ask anybody to call her that. She's, you know, call me Helen. She's just so grounded and humble and human and willing to jump in and roll up her sleeves and have fun in the sandbox. And
did you really call her Helen, though? Or because, like, I feel like you still got to say Dame. You still got it.
No. She doesn't.
Wow. Okay.
Want that or insist on that, you know? And yeah, I mean, you know, she's played so many different characters, but lots that are maybe not a Greek goddess, but, you know, the Queen of England. I mean, you know, like there's similarities in some of that DNA. Never felt like something I was like, oh, this is, I can't believe she's playing someone like this. That total sense to me once I knew they had pitched me the premise, the bosses, you know, back in July of 2019, they pitched me on, hey, we think this is what the sequel would be. And the Daughters of Atlas and, you know, their kind of qualities. And then once they were making the offer to Helen Mirren, I was like, yes, oh my God, she'd be a perfect Hespera. And Lucy was a perfect Calypso and Rachel was a perfect Anthea. And they're all so different, but they all play them so, so well. And with Helen, I got the most screen time with her. And again, like probably one of my favorite scenes in the entire film is us having that whole scene at the, you know, sitting down negotiating over hoagies and french fries that then turns into that brawl that we have in that warehouse, which is just so visceral and crazy. Like, that was the craziest thing. I was like, oh, is this legal? She's a dame. Isn't she on like a protected registry? Am I allowed to throw her around like this?
Yeah, you get arrested by the Royal Navy.
Stunts as they'd let her. What's that?
To get arrested by the Royal Navy after fighting
something. Those dudes with the big, you know, big phallic hats, fuzzy black phallic hats are going to come out and be like, no, you don't. That's our queen. Oh, dear. You know,
you mentioned, we mentioned up top that last time we talked to you, you did the Kurt Warner movie, similar to watching game film. Do you go back at all, like a quarterback, and watch the first movie and maybe be like, maybe I'll play the character a little different there. Maybe I'll do something different in a fight with a joke. Did you tweak anything, or is it more about just like got to keep it consistent?
No, I didn't go back and watch the first film. I don't know. I mean, I'm tapping into the child in me that is right there. I mean, I'm basically him most of the time anyway, in some way. And so that was an easy thing to just kind of go back to that well and just kind of dig into that same thing I dug into the first time. The difference was just where Billy's at emotionally and mentally in this movie. He's 3 years older, almost four. I mean, he's about to age out of the foster care system. So he's kind of wigging out, afraid that he's going to lose his family. He's waited and fought so hard to find. And then also feeling like an imposter because he's, you know, failing at being the you know, a competent leader of this Shazamly, this super family. And then these goddesses are, you know, have come down. And so it's just applying the same type of heart and character that I was able to find in the first one. And then just, you know, aging him up a little bit, because between 14 and 17, it's a pretty marked difference in a teen's, yeah, you know, tween's life. So just trying to be as authentic with that as possible, and then, you know, be authentic with wherever he's at emotionally in it. But that was pretty much kind of the prep of it all.
I've seen you, and I know this happened throughout all the red carpets and the press tour. It's happened. You've gotten the question about Peter Safran, James Gunn, DC, yada, yada. I did appreciate, though, this is, I guess, more of a statement than a question. We'll see if you have any thoughts on it, because I know you don't know much about the future there to begin with. But I did like, there was a question like, would you be happy if, you know, this was the end? Was this a good way to end it? And you gave, I feel like typically you get like the answer, you, the cliche answer, like, oh, of course it would be. You're like, not really. Like, I would like to play this character again. What do they want you to say?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's really interesting. It's funny how some reporters, I think they're trying to be original, or they're trying to, I don't know. Like,
I get it. We used to do it too. Now, like we got to stop asking the same damn question. They're gonna hate us.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, first of all, a lot of the things that these questions come out of are all just like rumor milly clickbait. So like, I feel like they're not even doing their due diligence and being like, well, why am I asking this question? You know, one person said, so, you know, we hear there are a lot of rumors that you weren't even going to come back for this movie, for the second one. I was like, what? Who? When was that? That's news to me. Also, even if it was true, which it's not, I mean, I think there's been things online of, well, will he come back for a third one? All that stuff that's been talked about. But this person clearly didn't do their research. And even if that was the case, if somehow there was talk of me maybe not coming back, why would you start at my premiere? Why would you start the interview with being like, you almost didn't get brought back, huh? Like, what? How is that a good idea? I was shocked. I don't even really know how to answer this, but we'll just keep moving forward. The same thing kind of similarly with somebody being like, you know, you don't know. I mean, if this is your last one, it's like, I don't know. I don't really look at it like that. I don't like, I mean, I guess I think what I told her, I was like, listen, I'm very proud of whatever this, you know, with the movie that we made. And if this is in fact the last one, which I hope it's not, but if it is, I mean, I'm proud of it. And the next one, if the next one's the last one, I'll still try to do the best I can with that one and so on. I mean, you know, it's just, yeah, it's a weird, I think it's like trying to get deep with a question, but really it's kind of like, what am I supposed to do with that? Really?
You know, so you gave the right answer. You gave the good answer. You're like, yeah, I would like to do it. We talked recently in an interview for the movie Cocaine Bear. We talked to Alden Ehrenreich, who gets the question routinely, will you come back? Would you ever come back as young Han Solo? And I want, whether it be you or one day, I want someone on the red carpet to be like, no. To be like, hey, would you ever come back and do Shazam? She's like, no. Just to see their people's reaction, like, oh, what the hell? He actually...
Well, no, I mean, I feel like I've heard that before. I feel like I've heard some people say, no, I'm hanging up the hat. I don't need to play. I can't think of who. Maybe it was like Downey Jr. with Iron Man, you know, and that became a defense.
Harrison Ford with anything but Indiana Jones.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah. But listen, I mean, yeah, eventually it's not going to be the right fit. You know, I'll get to a point where I won't be able to believably be Shazam, and there'll be somebody better for the job. So at that point, I would hope that I'd be like, yeah, I'm good. I don't need to keep forcing myself into whatever the situation is.
But for now, you are very much in the right role. Shazam! Fury of the Gods, reminder, out March 17th. Out already some places. And when you're listening to this, definitely out. I'm going to give you a couple rapid fire before we let you go here. Mixed bag of stuff. What's a role you've auditioned for maybe in the past you didn't get, but you really want, that you kind of look back on, you're like, damn.
Well, I got really close and I really wanted Star-Lord in Guardians of the Galaxy, but it wasn't meant to be. And at the time, it broke my heart, really broke me. But I also didn't realize I was dealing with a lot of mental health issues at the time. So it was even more difficult to let it go. As it turned out, it was all what it was supposed to be. That wasn't my role. That was Chris Pratt's role, and he's so good in it. And I ended up getting to be this guy. And I love playing this role. So, you know, but that would have been a really fun role to play too.
You still get the dance too. You know, like the dancing exactly. Is still there with this character, right? What is your favorite superhero performance of all time? Movie or TV? Could be a villain too.
You know, I'm still pretty about Michael Keaton Batman OG, and even in Batman Returns, right? Well, that was the second one, I believe. And really all the performances. I mean, Nicholson as the Joker and DeVito as the Penguin and Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman, like these were fantastic performances. I don't know. I'll give you all those.
Keen is what, like, so I was born in 91, but I still grew up for the most part with Batman, with the original Batman movie, because I watched when I was pretty young. And there's, you sometimes don't realize the nostalgia you have. Like when they release that Flash trailer and then you see Michael Keaton as Batman in the music plays.
Oh, dude, it's so good.
It's like, I don't know, maybe in like older age, I'm like, I'm not going to get moved by stuff like that. And then I kind of perk up like, oh my God, that got me a little bit.
Yeah.
Got me going. You get the green light to make any movie you want. What director do you pick?
Well, it depends on the movie, right? I mean, like, you know, totally different directors are going to bring a different thing to it. But I mean, as far as directors I'd like to work with, geez Louise, Paul Thomas Anderson, I think, is pretty much.
I would actually say he may be the most popular pick when we ask this question.
Yeah, he's just an incredibly talented director. But, you know, Martin McDonough, Wes Anderson, Spielberg, Zemeckis. I mean, Zemeckis is a huge part of my childhood and just creating so many incredible films that have moved me and touched me so much throughout my life. So, you know, people like that, Scorsese, I don't know. I mean, there's so many directors I would love to work with.
I feel like you would fit really well into a Wes Anderson movie. Just the framing of those shots and
the quirkiness of it all, man.
Do you have like a max level of being whimsical that you have? Like, do you really have that in you?
Oh yeah. Oh, I love good whimsical. I mean, Wes Anderson films all have that really fun little magic about them that is delightful. I like to use that term. It's delights, you know? And I think Moonrise Kingdom was the ultimate level of that. Like it was, you know, not that I didn't love Rushmore and Tenenbaums and, you know, Life Aquatic and all these films, but to put that whimsy into allowing these kids at these camps to, mm-hmm. you know, that be the narrative and that be the, you know, your kind of touchstone through the movie was like just chef's kiss. I loved it so much.
Weirdest fan interactions you get. Is it Chuck fans or is it DC fans? Who goes the deepest in terms of fandom?
Yeah, I would say all the Chuck interactions are all positive. I wish all the DC interactions were all positive, but there are a contingent of DC fans or people that call themselves DC fans who are or can be quite angry and mean and even me saying this will trigger them, and then they'll go on the offensive and be like, he called us mean, this motherfucker. There you go, case in point. I don't know what to tell you guys, but you know, the way that they stage what they want done and the way they want to cancel people and like whatever that is, that's the weirdest. It's dark and it's toxic. And I wish that they would recognize that. I wish that they, you know, I wish there was more kindness involved in all of this. But it is what it is.
It's kind of like you said earlier, we talked about the red carpet interviews. It comes from like the rumor mill stuff, and we've noticed that too. And I'd say we noticed that first with Star Wars more than anything, is that it's good. It's a good and bad thing. Fans have more say with social media, and fans can come up with theories and all this stuff. But it's that like theory culture of you want what you want to see in a movie, where back in the day it was like, oh, that's what George Lucas made. That's his. And now it's like, nope, that's not what I want for Luke. Still, it's one of those.
And it better be what I want. It better be what I want. And if it's not what I want, then it's fucking stupid. And we should make people boycott it. Nobody should watch it. It's like, what the what?
Yeah, review bomb.
This is kind of the world where we're creating right now, man. I mean, you know, society is just enforcing this in a lot of people. Like whatever you think is right. It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. It doesn't matter what science says. It doesn't matter what logic or rational thought implore. It's if you're feeling it, then you're right and everyone else is wrong. And it's like, that's not really how life works.
We send you back in a time machine. You can put yourself in any sitcom from the past. What sitcom are you putting yourself in?
Oh, wow. Oh wow, G Scoop!
It could be a big role. It could be like a guest spot role.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many. I mean, obviously, I grew up with all the TGIF and all that stuff. So, I mean, that would be really fun. But also, like Three's Company. I mean, Cheers. To go back and be in Cheers. Yeah, Three's Company, Cheers, something like that.
A 5-minute scene in Cheers, just at the bar, would be pretty. That's pretty top to top. And finally, we talked about video game adaptations with you the last time you were on. Have you been able to check out The Last of Us?
I have. I'm like up to episode 3 or so.
What do you think?
I love it. I loved the first game. I said it at the time, and I'll say it, continue to say it. It's some of the best content, whether TV, movie, video game, whatever. Like, the first game was exceptional. And then they made a second one that was almost basically even better. I mean, on par with, if not somewhat better, which is crazy because you don't often get sequels like that of any kind. So I'm a huge fan of the franchise in general. And I think that what they're doing with the show is excellent. And I'm just jealous I haven't been on it.
There's also another one coming. There's, being a Chris Pratt, the Mario movie's another in terms of like big video game adaptation into this is a big. We talked with you in 2021, I guess, summer. That's when that movie came out. And it's like, to have two. I mean, before, the idea of having one good video game adaptation of anything was just the most insane thought. It's like, could you have two in 1 year? Two? And there's a yes. So, I don't know. Maybe they've figured it out.
I hope so.
But Shazam Fury of the Gods coming out. When you listen to this, already out in theaters. Absolutely one of the most fun superhero franchises out there. We hope it's not your last. We hope there's plenty more to come. Thank you so much. Always, it's an absolute joy talking to you. Can't wait to see the movie. Can't wait to talk to you again.
You too, brother. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it. We'll see you soon.
Thank you. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Zachary Levi.
Please don't listen to anything further. If you're listening, Zachary Levi, do not listen past this point. You are banned from Zachary listening Levi. Past this timestamp.
Great dude. Shazam, Fury of the Gods, the sequel to Shazam, which came out a few years ago. And surprised, I thoroughly enjoyed Shazam. It wasn't the best movie of all time, but very enjoyable, fun movie.
Notably one of the few superhero movies that Robbie Fox despises. One of the very few.
He hated it. I'll never forget. I turned to him. I was like, hey, you want to stay for the post-credit? He was like, no, let's go. I was like, all right, let's get on out of here. Directed once again by David F. Sandberg, who is a horror director. And it seems to be going back to that space, by the way. He's like, I'm going back to horror. Done with superhero movies for a while. But still with the powers of the gods, Billy Batson and his fellow foster kids are still learning how to juggle teenage life with their adult superhero alter egos. When a vengeful trio of ancient gods arrives on Earth in search of the magic stolen from them long ago, Shazam and his allies get thrust into a battle for their superpowers, their lives, and the fate of the world. New people in the cast this time, Rachel Zegler, who rose to fame through the new West Side Story, Lucy Liu, Dame Helen Mirren, Adam Brody, Megan Good now as in more a full-time role as the Shazamly, Asher Angel back as young Billy Batson for 90 seconds. Yeah. What's his face? Jack Dylan Glazer. Is that his name?
Yeah. This is his movie.
He should work at a donut shop.
He's the fucking main character.
And then, of course, Zachary Levi as Billy Batson, Shazam. Jaimin Hansu, our good friend, is in the movie, by the way. Love Jaimin Hansu. What a fucking legend.
He's been in like every single superhero movie that's ever existed.
It's incredible. This movie's ass.
No good.
It's bad.
Man, I don't know what they were doing here. And David F. Sandberg was very surprised by the reaction of the movie, which I get. Look, I could never make a movie, just how it is. He made a pretty solid Annabelle movie. He made that the movie Lights Out, very cool horror movie. And I like the first Shazam. This is just not – I just don't know what they were thinking here. It's like they didn't know what – it's just like they didn't know what made the first one good. And I don't know. It's like it's missing everything that made the first one enjoyable. And everything is – and this is not even original take. And so I'm not comparing this as like my – I'm the first one to say this. Many have said this. It's like they just took everything they thought people liked and just made it grander. But it didn't work. Like it's just who called him – I was watching a review last night. Oh, it might have been Dan Rowe said, like, it's Billy Batson or like Shazam is just a doofus in this movie. It's just too much. And I don't think that's the fault of the actors at all. No. I think it's the direction of the. I will pin this movie on David F. Sandberg. I think it's just a poor directing job. It's like they just heightened everything from the first one and made it more absurd. And that's kind of why Shazam worked in the first place, I thought, because it was a fun movie in a universe that was pretty dour and depressing. And now it's just too much. Like it's like a fake version of the first one. I really, really didn't like this movie. Like I thought this movie was legitimately pretty fucking bad. 49 out of 100. I did not like this movie. This is bottom rung superhero movie for me. This is right around. This is one point above X-Men Dark Phoenix. It's a couple above Wonder Woman 1984. Which is unfortunate because like in 1984, after that opening scene had no bones. Like it was just like, there's nothing good about this. This had stuff. You're like, this should be fun. This should be good. There's too many good people in it, but man, oh man, I did not like this movie. Jack Dylan Glazer, by the way,
too old.
I hate that character.
And he was the,
Dude, hated
he's like dude? Doing like a Jesse Eisenberg impression.
Yeah,
like he's like if somebody like tried to act like Jesse Eisenberg, that's what they would do.
It's oh man, yeah. I did not like this movie. Yeah, really didn't like it. Ken Jack.
Yeah, I'm with you. I echo a lot of what you're saying. I ended up on a 55 for it. I think it follows essentially the same exact structure as the first Shazam movie. It's like, hey, here's first act. It's Billy struggling with life. Second act, bad guy abducts your family. Third act, giant CGI battle with the bad guy summoning a bunch of CGI monsters. And like, that's whatever. That's fine. And then like, but what they didn't do is give us enough Billy Batson, which you referenced earlier. Like that kid, like that actor, he's an afterthought in this movie. No one cares about him. And like, that's one of the cooler things I think about the Shazam and sort of to a lesser degree, the Shazamily in the first one was like, you don't really get to see a lot of double life stuff in any of the DCEU stuff movies at all. Like Al period. And like, this is one of the few that did, and they just didn't do any of that in this movie. And I also think that the kid actor Asher, whatever, he was not in sync with Zach Levi at all. Like that, like,
no,
thank you. That's a huge complaint that I have.
Totally different people. Yeah.
Dude, Zach Levi, his Captain Marvel character, he acts younger by like 5 years.
Thank you.
It makes no sense.
The kid is like a somber. Like,
they establish in this movie that these characters are almost 18.
Yeah.
And yet, and when he's Shazam, he acts like a 13-year-old. Yeah.
And then that kid is like a somber teen actor. I will say, I think Adam Brody and Dylan Glazer were pretty synced up. But the rest of them, like the other ones didn't really matter. And like Shazam just wasn't even close. And that was really important, I think. And also,
like, I get to an extent, like I get him being like, like maybe more fun and lively as Shazam, yeah. Right? Because he's got the comp, but like,
but he's a dude.
There's
they're
a level
totally
of
different
like,
people.
It's too much. Yeah.
Like he is hyper energy, like literally like a 7-year-old kid or something like that. And the other kid's just like the somber, you know, teen dude. And that just didn't work. And I think that like a lot of people shit on Marvel for like the, well, that just happened humor. But this is maybe the worst offender I've seen of that in a very long time. The humor was super flat. And I think at the end of the day, the movie was geared much more towards kids, which is fine. And I think like families would probably like this movie. And that's it's just it didn't really feel like it hit the same level of like, I don't know, universal watchability as the first one. And also felt weird watching it, basically knowing that it's the death rattle for the before like the reset with the Flash of the DCEU. So like post credit ending shit, like all that's basically meaningless. So like it's just that part of it is just kind of odd. But like you throw that aside, still a bad movie.
Got one more. Aquaman 2.
Where's your comment? Your favorite, by the way, spoilers. Are you not going to talk about the arrival of your favorite character and actress?
Oh, yeah, I know. In the closing seconds, getting old Gal Gadot for one last little moment in the sun before she disappears forever as Wonder Woman.
And she has gotten worse, like substantially as an actress. It's really weird. Like the first Wonder Woman, she's not great, but she's passable.
They don't ask her to do a lot in the first Wonder Woman.
Patty Jenkins knew her weaknesses and strengths as an actor and kind of worked around them. Now it's like she might as well be in a high school play.
Mm-hmm. It's no good.
She also wasn't there for that scene. That's a body. That's someone else's body that they put her face onto. So it looks even weirder. Like when she's walking
did
over.
Did this get hit by my only defense at this was just hit by COVID delays.
It had to have been.
She's filming Heart of Stone. Too busy. Couldn't come to the set.
Because didn't we just review a movie that had this something similar? I'm only being fair to that.
I think you're right. I don't remember off the top of my head though.
But anyway,
I mean, don't get me wrong. This movie again. This movie is cheeks. Don't get me wrong.
Nothing to do with COVID.
Yeah, no. Look, I wasn't crazy about the first Shazam because I'll explain why in a second because I have the same problems here. But it's an impossible movie to dislike or hate. I mean, its heart is in the right place. Like it's so well intentioned. Right. This one, I feel differently about because the issues I've had with both these films is I don't think they ever know what they want to be. Because there's moments, especially with the humor, like you brought up, Ken Jack, where it is aimed at like little kids, like the fucking Blue's Clues audience. And then there's moments of like actual like dark imagery and like moments of peril. And like I feel like tonally, both these movies are kind of messes. And man, I was laughing at it, and I felt bad and kind of you know. Being a hypocrite as somebody who freaks out over nothing, but like this premise is for fucking dorks, dude. I mean, I was watching this thing just like rolling my eyes at it. Again with the humor, people get mad at the Marvel like that just happened stuff, but Marvel has a self-awareness to them in a lot of those Avengers movies, like Infinity War, when they acknowledge like, hey, this is I just got a fucking magical thing from a wizard, and now we got to go to space. Like they acknowledge it here. They play those parts up like the Helen Mirren's playing this like she's going for the fucking Oscar. And and so I just feel like tonally it doesn't work. I really like Rachel Zegler in the little bit she's in, but ultimately that character's kind of forgettable. And I just don't vibe with these characters at all. They're not unlikable, but I just view the whole thing as dated. The series just feels dated, and I think that's why this one bombed the way it did.
Mm.
It really is just perplexing. These characters age up from 13, you know, they're all like seniors in high school, you know, aging out, and somehow they all regress maturity wise. And the themes regress, the humor regresses. My only guess is that the studio looked at the last movie and they said, oh, people really liked the familial aspects, the family comedy, angle. And so let's double down on that. But they double down on it in a way where it's like, we're going to target this at 8-year-olds. I mean, it's right. it really is for 8-year-olds. I mean, they have a scene where she feeds a unicorn Skittles. It's for children. It's for children.
Yep.
And then the CGI fight at the end has become unforgivable.
Oh my God. It was so long.
But you get the zombies. Like, why are we still – Black Adam did this, and a lot of movies have done this. Ant-Man just did it too. These huge, nondescript NPC armies that look – it basically is a video game just cutting through all these monsters that have no personality. It makes no sense to introduce it. he couldn't beat the sisters. So why are you adding in another element? Why doesn't he just fight the sisters?
To be fair, that's what the Avengers did. And they're like, I guess people are just like, hey, this is what to do. Nondescript bad guy army that we'll never have to talk about again. I couldn't even tell you their names anymore.
I'll be honest. I don't think it worked that well in the Avengers.
Exactly.
The Skittles thing, it's not the reason I hated the movie, but there are ways to do product placement and to make it funny and to make it meta. But then there's ways to like, but once you do it where you're like, hey, we're being meta here, that's when it becomes the worst.
Fucking annoying. Yes.
It's funny because
right. Like that's where like, product placement, product placement. Like I was there's one thing I laugh at every time. And actually, I guess it's not that good because I don't remember what it is. I think it's Buick. I might be wrong. When the henchmen in Mission Impossible Fallout, when they're doing that great chase scene through Paris and they get out of the van, like the door, like the sides come down and they get in their cars and there's just like these four cars lined up. And so it looks like a car commercial, like every movie you love has product placement, like whatever. But there's the level of like product placement. Then there's product placement where it's acknowledged and you're like, all right, it's a little cheap, but it's funny. So I can excuse it. And then there's like, look at this. Look what we're doing here.
That's
Levi's, we're doing a Skittles ad. How funny is that? It's like, this is now.
Levi's no stranger to that, this too. Because they had to do that to keep Chuck on the air. Remember he
Chuck with
about
the
that?
Subway sandwiches.
Yeah, the Subway in the car. My Kia four-door. I mean, this thing is unbelievable. You're damn right, Chuck. It's a good car.
It's also insane because this movie may have worked if the fucking Rock had agreed to be the villain. Like Black Adam comes in and beat, because is a very cool Black Adam.
I was letting you have your thunder, by the way, because I know you hate the Rock now.
I'm all off on him. Completely off on him. He's done for. He's finished.
Noted. Gooch routinely off on the Rock.
Come on the pod, Rock.
Always
come
on, getting off come on the pod,
Rock Johnson. We'll talk about things. fix your fucking ego.
I mean, I tweeted about it. I said it's insane that he refused to be a villain and then promoted the movie as if he's some sort of badass villain. And then he wasn't in that movie. It was the whole,
And then he tried to pass off the blame at the Oscars in that red carpet interview, which was kind of funny.
I'm trying to think of one thing I liked about this movie. I kind of liked the direction they actually initially started in, which was him in that therapist chair talking about aging up and like he doesn't want to be deserted again and he's got his family and he's worried about them. And they completely ditched that storyline. And by the way, every single one of his family members are outside of Jack Dylan Grazer. They're pretty much one note characters. And the worst example was his gay brother, Pedro, who only characteristic
he's gay.
Is I'm gay.
He literally says it. That's like the punchline of one of the things. He just goes, everyone tell your secret. And he's like, I'm gay. And they're like, yeah, we know, Pedro.
If I was a gay man, I'd say, I don't want this representation. This is the worst. This is worse than like putting us down. This is just like, what are we doing here? He's watching the Phillies game and he's like, oh, yeah, I really like it. And he's looking at a magazine. That's the only thing. God, Jesus Christ.
It's a bit, Mary Marvel is offensive.
Good. There it is. Mary Marvel is good. Which also very funny. They age up every single character and change out their appearance, except for Mary Marvel. I wonder why.
It was cool seeing the original actor from OG Shazam calling him Captain Marvel or whatever, or Mr. Marvel, whatever. It was cool.
Captain Marvel, that's his name.
Yeah, Captain Marvel.
Yes.
Mr. Marvel.
Also, one more thing. Jaimin Hansu making a cameo as himself.
Yeah, that was very funny. I had a genuine laugh out of that, of him showing up in non-wizard gear with like legit cool fashion.
But it was just that's how he dresses. So yeah, in real life. He probably just showed up to like set like in one of his outfits and was like, all right, let's roll.
And they're all like, hey, the wizard's here. And he's dressed like,
oh my God. Rachel Zegler also doesn't want to be associated with this shit at all.
Yeah. No, she didn't. She's pretty good in it, I felt like, but
Didn't she say she's like, yeah, I did this because I needed money or something like that. It's like, it might've been out of context, the quote I saw, but I don't know. It's just funny.
Nope.
I like it a lot. I like that quote.
The exact question was like, what made you decide? Like what made you interested in taking on a role in the DC universe? And she was like, to be honest, I needed a job being so serious.
Mm-hmm.
Respect,
and that's also true. I mean, they need money like anyone else.
Oh my God.
I can't stress enough. Like I know 49 doesn't seem like truly awful. Cause it's not, I mean, it's not, but like, there's not, I don't know the last time I did like a big release and had it this low. It's like, I really didn't like it.
There is something pathetic about it. Like that. You can't even like put your finger on. There's just, there is a lameness to this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Everything just feels stale and dated.
The box office too. Boy,
bad.
This is
no good.
The lowest Morbius.
Worst box office for a DC film since Constantine.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And this at one point was supposed to open up against Avatar.
Avatar.
What happened with that Constantine thing? I saw Keanu said like it's not happening anymore or something, or they're still struggling to get it made. Because at first they just said, yes, it's happening. And now they're like, nah, actually not.
Yeah, that always felt weird bringing back Keanu for that. Like,
yeah.
Never really made much sense.
Speaking of Keanu, that's our next movie reviewing, John Wick Chapter 4.
I can't wait for that.
Which,
oh, that's this week. Holy shit.
Like a 90-something percent
reviews for that.
Yeah, they're great.
They're saying best of the franchise.
I can't fucking wait.
100 reviews, 93% Rotten Tomatoes critics.
Cannot wait.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fired up. I have a ticket for Friday. Very, very excited. I mean, most of the negative stuff is like, it's a little long. I don't give a fuck.
Make
it three fucking hours. It's John Wick. It's John
Maybe
Wick.
More of that, less Shazam time, or less Scream time, and less all the other time.
Shut up about Scream. Scream was good.
Yeah, good
Scream
to being
should
bad.
Be 30 minutes longer.
Yeah, it was pretty,
great.
Pretty ugly.
Great movie.
And then what's after that? When is Air? Is Air like April?
Yes.
Hold on. I got the schedule.
That first trailer for Jedi.
We got John Wick Chapter 4 next week. Then the week after that, we have, oh my God, that's right. That's the crazy week. We have Dungeons and Dragons, mm-hmm. Honor Among Thieves.
Every Murder Mystery of that 2 is good. I'm so
glowing.
Yeah.
I know. I'm very happy. I was borderline, like, so close to making like a bet with you guys. I would have ended up like eating a shoe or something based on like where I was. That's the confidence level I was at with this movie.
Being the wild part is the trailers are almost getting worse. It doesn't look very good.
They're so
look
bad.
Good at all. I know.
Looks like ass.
So, I don't know.
Again, to be fair though, I can't victory lap enough because we did walk it back a little bit.
Yeah, and again, because the trailers are so bad, like whoever edited put those together to go to jail if these movies turn out being good.
They're calling us Paper Hands Gooch, Paper Hands Low. didn't hold on to the Dungeons and Dragons stuff. there's a lot of movies coming out, so we'll probably be cramming multiple movies into episodes, especially because like Murder Mystery is Netflix, Tetris is Apple. Then we're gonna review both Air and Super Mario the same the same day, because those come out, which is I can't wait for that back to back.
Real quick, somebody this is brought up and I didn't think about it at the time. Do you think Super Mario worldwide is going to be the biggest movie of the year?
Animated at least. Wait, no, actually the Spider-Man one comes out.
What are you, Spider-Verse?
Oh, are you just talking about Guardians. End of year, or are you just talking about when it comes out?
End of the year. Yeah. I think Super Mario will be the biggest.
It might. Spider-Man's going to be real close. Spider-Verse
will be
really close.
I don't think
really
foreign markets like Mario outside of Italy. I don't think they fuck with Italian plumbers like that.
Japan?
It is going to kill.
Two markets will fuck with Mario. Italy and Japan. The Axis is getting back together. Oh no! All they're missing is Germany.
You don't think Guardians will be up there?
Guardians will be big.
I would probably say Guardians will be one, and then this could be.
How would that do international? How good did Guardians do with international box office? I know obviously did great domestic.
But. Yeah, I don't know. Guardians will be interesting, but I think Spider-Verse. I think Spider-Verse and Mario are probably top five. I mean, top. I mean, it'll be. I think like what
the
else?
The last
is,
one made
$500 million that,
in international. The last Guardians movie,
Trolls 3.
Yeah, it's not that great actually.
Trolls 3.
It won't be that. Won't be that big.
The Expendables 4.
Elemental, Pixar.
Yeah. No. The Elemental won't make
the Spider-Man one. So? I think the Spider-Man one could do well. No, didn't the first one?
I think Spider-Verse is going to get a huge marketing push and do very well. Spider-Man is so.
Didn't make that much money. I didn't realize universe. That. It only made like
what about
under
the
400
Nun
million. 2? Oh, fuck.
The first one did.
Yeah.
Well, wait, hold on. Does director Mike Titties
Mike
have
Titties
any movie coming out this
year? Something. My dog, Mike Titties. He's got to have something with Marlon Wayans cooking. I know he does.
Man, he hasn't had a movie come out since 2019.
And that was the one with Marlon Wayans, the twins or triplets one, right? Whatever it was.
Yeah.
Oh, I was trying to look up Michael Titties. Trying to look up Michael Titties, and I ended up finding a different Michael Titty. I guess.
Mike Titties.
I hope it's Mike Wachowski with big knockers.
Mike Titty. Mikey Dougie Titty from Cornwall. He played for this guy rocks. Just something about the OG Michael Titties. And I don't know if you know this this guy very well, Chris. He's just a director. His name is Michael Titties. That's all you need to know about him.
He'll stand out.
What a man. What an incredible man. So that's it. Sam Fury of the Gods was ass. We'll do John Wick Chapter 4 next week. Very excited about that. Mm-hmm. And we'll start Succession stuff. We'll get some theories rocking.
Yep.
Who's going to succeed? What if they just all die? What if all of them die?
That's what I want to happen. I want them all to die. That's like, that would make everybody happy. I think everybody would be happy with that ending.
What, just like a bomb drops on them
they're
or something?
They're all such pieces of shit. That's exactly. The thing. Like, they really are.
Yeah.
So it makes it good.
That's it. For Ken, Jack, Chris, Gooch, I'm Jeff DeVille. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.
Dedication isn't born in the light of day. It's carved in the quiet hours before the world blinks awake. At Boar's Head, we rise with a mission to deliver craftsmanship worthy of your table. A slice of something special folded into every moment worth savoring. Because dedication means delivering only the very best. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
Lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One sweet tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
Hey, it's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan tailored pan at work and then the happy hour right after, the Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together, and of course, their denim, because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.